Hey everybody, just a quick interjection before we get the episode started. Just want to let you know that at the time of editing this episode, there was no news about the Xbox Developer Direct that's happening on June 18th when I recorded this episode, so I don't mention it at all. But I felt that given it's happening so soon, I should probably say something about it here in the episode, so this is me doing just that. So if you aren't aware, Xbox is doing a Developer Direct, which is going to showcase four games that are currently in development within the Xbox franchise, one of which is Avowed, right? So we're going to be seeing, I think it's Indiana Jones, Era Stories Untold, Hellblade 2 Senua's Saga, and Avowed. So tune in June 18th, 12 p.m. Pacific time. I'll leave it to you to figure it out on Xbox's YouTube channel, I suppose. So I don't know if it's just going to be developer footage of like how it's going, or if we're going to see any gameplay, or we're going to learn anything. If there's anything of note, I'll include it in a future episode, but just wanted to let you know. All right, time to get into the episode. Welcome to the world of Aeora, a news and lore podcast about the Pillars of Eternity games, as well as Obsidian Entertainment's upcoming release, Avowed. Hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of the World of Aeora. I'm your host, Eric, aka Gingerino. Thanks everybody for joining me on another episode as we dive into the history, lore, and game mechanics of Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2 as we gear up for the release of Avowed. For those wondering why we pair those games together, it's because they share the same fantasy setting known as Aeora. So as the theory goes, if we dive into those first two Pillars games, we'll be able to glean insights about the world and its narratives so that we can have a more nuanced understanding about Avowed as it undergoes development and when it's eventually released to appreciate the stories that they write for the game, as well as speculate ahead of time about what might be going on over at Obsidian. Today, I'm returning back to the bestiary topics that I've been covering lately, which are the unique fantasy creatures that we see within the world of Aeora through Pillars of Eternity 1 and 2. Now, for those unfamiliar, in many fantasy settings, you'll find unique and fantastical creatures that exist within these worlds, dragons being kind of like one of the main ones that you see, but you'll also see some like basic mundane creatures as well. And Pillars of Eternity within the world of Aeora is no different. We do see unique creatures within the world that we don't see in our real Earth world, and we don't even see in other fantasy worlds as well. And today, I'm going to be focusing specifically on one kind of creature that we see in Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire, known as the Imp. No news to go over today regarding anything Avowed-related or Pillars of Eternity-related, although apparently there has been a patch released on the beta branch on Steam for Pillars of Eternity 1, the original game, way back from 2015. It's theorized that very likely what this means is that they're just expecting an influx of new players on Pillars of Eternity 1 since Avowed is getting closer and closer to release, and they're probably just wanting to, you know, patch bugs out, make it a better experience for people, which I'm all for. I think they're great games, and I hope anyone listening to this, that if you haven't dove into it, I hope that you will. They're great games. They'll help you learn more about the world of Aeora than anything I could really teach you. It'd be firsthand. But outside of that, that's pretty much it, so let's dive straight into the lore.
I'm curious. What exactly did you find there?
So imps are a type of creature that we see within the world of Aeora, and specifically we see them in Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire. You don't encounter them in the first game, and I wonder if whether or not that is because they're only supposed to be in the Deadfire Archipelago, which is where the second game is set, or if it was a creature that they made just during the development of the second game, and it's supposed to exist in other places in the world. They're technically categorized as a primordial creature, which if you've been paying attention to my episodes of late, I did an episode on primordial type creatures a few episodes ago. But I also saw somewhere that they could be considered wilder creatures as well, because they kind of have sentience and intellect. Before I go and get into the official lore of what an imp is, I'll give my own personal definition. They are these highly irritating nuisance of a creature. They're like a humanoid bat, almost, because they have wings and they have a long tail. They're almost like little devils as well, kind of like a bat or a little devil, if you will. They're these winged creatures that you'll usually see around the manors or places of archmages, or even in ancient ruins that have a significant amount of magic around them. But they are these little flying devil-like creatures, if you could imagine something like that, with horns and glowing yellow eyes and all that, and they have a very base level of intellect, although you can actually find some with a really high intellect score, but they do seem to have kind of an idiocy about them. I'm not really sure what word to use there. I find them hilarious. As a player, they're hilarious, but I'm sure to having live and work with them, they're absolutely horrendous. They smell bad, they're vulgar, they steal things, they don't listen to you. They probably will try to actively work against you sometimes, but if you're domineering enough over them, they'll do what you ask. So you often see them in an archmage's manor where they live, and they're just doing the bidding of the master archmage of the area. So particularly I'm thinking of Pillage Attorney 2, Deadfire. You see imps everywhere in Archimere's house, Archimere being one of the members of the Circle of Archmagi, so he's one of the most powerful mages that exists within the world, and he has imps doing his bidding within his household, but he does not like them. They are very annoying, but you see them doing his bidding, so for some reason, they're like these little annoying helpers that archmages use, and honestly, it's hilarious. If you haven't encountered them in Pillars of Eternity 2, Deadfire, keep playing until you do. They're just, sometimes they're even worth it just in themselves. But enough of my really bad paraphrasing of what they are. Let's dive into what the actual description is. I'm getting all of today's information off the Pillars of Eternity fandom website, although I did check to see if the descriptions line up with the official lore written down in the Pillars of Eternity 2 guidebook, and they do, so it does coincide with that. We have two definitions of imps to go off of. We have one definition for imps in general, and then one for the brine imp in specific. So we'll start with regular imps in general. Imps are troublemakers and vagabonds, as they neither protect a den for long nor concern themselves overmuch with feeding. They prefer to spend their days seeking out passing adventurers or animals to satisfy their amusement. This is where the imp's nefarious character comes into play, as quote-unquote amusement covers a broad variety of potential nuisances, exuding toxic gases, creating apparitions of other kith, teleporting, stealing, and generally doing harm to the unlucky victim. Wizards and other intellectuals have managed to bind imps to their service with mixed results. They can serve as spies, thieves, or in rare occasions, assassins, though their loyalty may go no further than recognizing an opportunity to do what they do best. And so they have an overall definition of the imp. These just kind of like these devil-winged creatures that are often under the employ of archmages or wizards, and they just kind of like to run around and do things that amuse them, which is usually just be mischievous and annoying, or possibly even straight up just harmful to random people. In the game, an imp's speech is represented by capital letters only, and they also prefer to use short sentences, which I find extra hilarious. It's kind of like a very punctuated way of talking, very in-your-face. I think Sam Riegel from Critical Role voices an imp in the game, and that just makes it all the better. When we interact with brine imps, that's a B-R-I-N-E, not an imp named Brian, we read a different description. Lured by the essence that magical items possess, brine imps commonly nest in sea caves or among the islands that pepper frequent shipping routes. To avoid a raiding flock, it is advised that ships transporting magical items anchor at least 5 leagues from any imp-inhabited island during nightfall. Elsewise, the crew may find their sails shredded and the hull carved up come morning. So these are just a unique type of imp that exists within the world of Eora. They're ones that exist, I guess, on coastlines and sea caves that will attack any ship with magical items on it. And this actually lines up with some lore that we're going to read in a second about imps themselves. Because when you start to ask, it's cool, we see what these imps are and kind of their personality and all that, but what is an imp and what is it motivated by? What is it doing? Why do they get employed by wizards? What's going on with imps? We start to learn a little bit more about them. To understand their relationship with magic, I'm going to shift over to a in-game book that we can get called On the Efficacy of Imps. So this is a book that you can get in the second Pillars of Eternity game, and it reads as follows. A time-worn adage among practitioners of the arcane arts avers that early wizards compelled imps to service not out of a desire for the assistance, but to banish them from underfoot. I doubt it not at all, for one could not conjure more unruly, noisome, maladroit, or irascible aid. Why, then, do we employ these diminutive meddlers? Now, so this first paragraph just has a lot of big words about how crappy it is to work with imps, but that they are still often used by wizards. And so why is that? Imps, dear reader, are to a wizard's sanctum as rats are to a ship. Whether out of malign instinct or pure mischievousness, they infiltrate our laboratories with alarming regularity. Nina Gauth, who is a wizard within this world, conjectures in his Sensitivity of Simpletons. The capitalization there indicates that's probably an in-game book that this person wrote, that imps infest any locus of concentrated mystical influence, and accounts of the creatures lurking among the uninhabited ruins of Engwith seem to corroborate his supposition. Yet a wizard's domicile seems to possess a particular appeal to them, regardless of whether it resides at a nexus of spiritual power or no. So in this paragraph, we learn that it seems that imps are, for whatever reason, attracted to magic, or at least attracted to, I guess, essence that's being used in a magical way. Essence is the stuff that souls are made of in this world, and essence is also the primary way that magic exists or is used. It seems that one of the archmages, Nina Gauth, who wrote Sensitivity of Simpletons, imply that imps kind of go wherever there's any mystical influence, and this seems to be true in the sense that you see imps just constantly in a wizard's domicile, and it seems to happen just not with the wizard's permission. It's like rats on a ship, you know? You don't order the rats ahead of time and put them on your ship. You just find them while you're out in the ocean. And so it seems like wizards have their big manors and their mansions, and just imps find a way in. But I imagine the reason that they end up being employed as, you know, service workers is because it's better to have them doing that than just running amok around the house. Left to their own devices, the winged miscreants accrue loose baubles, hoarding them in filthy dens as often as not established in our cupboards and privies. Seemingly possessed of an antiquities dealer's discernment, each prefers to pilfer the most valuable paraphernalia and potent artifacts, yet they remain pathetically inept in the use of even the simplest gewgaw. All right, so this paragraph is just talking about how, you know, if they are left to their own, they will run around your house, they will steal things, and they will take it back to wherever they're nesting, which will probably be, you know, one of your cupboards or something like that. And they'll take things that are usually pretty worthwhile, even though they don't know how to use them. So they're kind of dumb when it comes to this stuff, yet they just can't help but take it. It's kind of like a ferret, except a lot less cute. Probably, I don't know, they might smell equally as bad. I hear ferrets smell pretty bad if you don't take care of them, but regardless. I admit, the imp's general incompetence makes them appealing retainers. One of the little cretins may displace a favored wand of elemental power, but little peril exists of it activating the instrument and immolating your collected volumes of arcana. The same cannot be said of apprentices. Yet the beasts present a danger to the unwary, for they possess a low cunning not unlike that of Zorups and Orlins. Without a domineering hand to direct them, imps rapidly regress to their base instincts. As a result of their propensity for pack behavior, even a transitory leniency with a single imp can imperil a wizard's entire collection. So in closing out this in-game book, we learned that they're not really a big threat. Like, they just steal stuff and then hide it away. They don't know how to activate the magic or use it, so they're not dangerous in that sense. However, they are dangerous in the sense that if you show leniency to even one imp, I guess there must be like a dominance trait to imps where they recognize who's the alpha or something. And if you start showing any leniency towards them, then they're just going to have at it. They're just going to do whatever they want. And that could pose a threat to the place that you live. And so this is what a wizard is dealing with, I guess, a daily basis when using imps and how efficacious they are. I don't know if that's a word, if I used it properly, but hey, you know, I'm reading all these big words. I want to feel like I belong, you know? But their attraction to magic probably goes a little further than just, you know, oh, it's a magical shiny thing, if you will. It seems like there's something innate about their nature that attracts them towards magical items. In the book you find in the game, The Many Pitfalls of Imp Husbandry, we learn a little bit more about imps and their relation to magical implements. Don't worry, we're not going to talk about how to get imps to mate, as the title of the book would imply. Although that is hilarious, it actually has something else to say. This book narrates one scholar's dissection of all matters relating to the core of household imps, focusing notably on their cleaning and housebreaking. One passage has been underlined with a deep press of a quill. Never allow imps to learn spells or wield artifacts of power. Their bodies sponge up the essence remainder and grow exponentially larger in size. One of my household servants pilfered a ring from my collection and grew to the size of an aurochs before I had him properly drained. Their glands also grow more pungent than mere writing can hope to encompass, so beware. So we learn from this in-game book here that somehow soak magic up. So like when essence is used in a magical way, they somehow can absorb it into their body and become bigger. And I'm assuming that that's something that they like. They like becoming bigger, just not just because they're bigger, but I assume that there is a positive benefit to them as the imp for why they do that, which has a whole bunch of problems for people around imps. Like, A, it makes them more dangerous, but also B, the mischievousness also increases in severity, as well does the stink. This assertion about the connection between magic and imps is also corroborated by a note that we find in the Forgotten Sanctum DLC that is described here as, "I will hear no further argument on the matter. You were the one who permitted that chittering loudmouth to roam the collections freely for your amusement. Now that it's escaped, you're responsible for fetching it back. You must locate the pilfered artifacts. The Oracle warned us twice about keeping magic away from imps. On the bright side, this will prove a capital opportunity to test our milking procedure on a swollen imp. This will be good practice for subduing Nemnok before his devoted followers grow beyond our ability to control." Okay, so the summary of what this note is talking about, it's the context, I think, written from an archmage to an apprentice who clearly let an imp have too much free reign they were supposed to have, and they got away with a bunch of valuable material. This material was magical in nature, which someone called the Oracle warned this person not to let imps have, and as a result, this imp has become what is described as swollen. And so now they want to test their milking procedure on this swollen imp, which is, Obsidian, I really wish a different set of words was used there, not because I think it was bad writing, but because I had to say it on this podcast. But otherwise, it seems like when the imps are swelled up on magic, there is some way of getting that magic out of them, although there's no specificity on what that is. It's just left up to you and I to imagine. This note mentioned a imp known as Nemnok, which is actually a character within the game that you can meet, but there's something interesting about Nemnok, and we'll talk about that in a second. Before I start talking about specific imps that we encounter within the game, I do want to go over one more thing about their physiology, and that is talking about the language of an imp. And if you haven't read these things in game, you would never know this, but their language goes a lot further than you think. So when you interact in the game with imps, you'll have obviously like verbal moments, right? You're talking to an imp and then it will capital letters yell back at you in, you know, various ranges of intellect. And it's usually very short and to the point and not a very pleasant experience. But their language goes beyond just verbal. They also have an element of scent involved with their language. What I'm trying to say is that they can talk through smells. They can actually communicate ideas and content through smells. And we learn this from a couple of places within the game. One is an explosive item called Essence of Imp Spray, and the description reads as follows. "This putrid substance is some unknowable combination of urine, bile, and pheromones exuded from the stink glands of the common imp. While communication via spray is well documented in the natural world, imps are the only known creature to employ spoken and sprayed language at once, doubling up on the two in singularly unpleasant exchanges. How much they get across to each other in their effluvium is anyone's guess, though anger and annoyance seem the pillars of imp conversation." So this explosive item seems to imply that they can actually converse or in some way communicate. I don't know about converse, they can communicate in some way through their smell glands, so they emit some sort of a pungent odor that other person will smell, and that I communicate something, which is, you know, not something that people nearby really like. They apparently smell very bad, as we're going to learn in a book called The Alchemy of Imp Spray. So this is a quest item you get in Forgotten Sanctum. So this is going to talk a little bit more about imps and their conversations with their stink glands. This one made me particularly chuckle. It's written from the perspective of I presume a wizard who was keeping imps for experimentation or studying them. It might just be a scholar. But it reads, "I kept a pair of imps caged for the better part of 3 decades as I scripted volume 5 of my series, Scent Languages of the Perverse." So it sounds so far like this scholar is studying the scented language of imps. "Every day, the duo would fill the air from their glands as they communicated across the distance. I grew to understand the alchemy of their spray by standing in its path and allowing the fetid effluvium to wash over me. Such wondrous effluvium, so potent, it hovers over me still. Just as I had written the last page of what was to be my greatest work, the dialect of their spray changed entirely, rendering my findings useless. Oh, but how they laughed at my expense. I know the smell of failure. It is the reek of 30 years' worth of concentrated imp farts sprayed into one's face, and the bitterness of having no academic recognition to show for it. I like that last part. 30 years' worth of concentrated imp farts sprayed into one's face, no academic recognition to show for it. That sucks. That sucks, my dude. Even though you're a fictional character, I still feel actually bad for you. That sucks so much, but it's very funny. The one thing that I do find very interesting about this is he describes it as the dialect of their spray. And I'm not 100% sure what that means, but there was something that changed in, I don't know about the chemistry of the spray or the way it was sprayed or whatever, that changed, I guess, the content of the language of whatever is being said through the spray. And so that kind of tells me, I don't know, I'm not an expert in the way animals communicate with scent, but it feels like to me, like there's more than just base ideas being transmitted through this olfactory kind of way. I'm not sure if that's the right word to use, but whatever, through scents. I wonder how complex the actual messages get. We don't actually know, but it's interesting to think about, or maybe not think about, depending on your preferences. But that's everything about an imp's physiology and its relationship with magic. So I want to talk about a few specific imps that we get to interact with in the game. I will point out there are actually way more than just these ones I'm going to talk about, but we don't know much about other ones. Most other ones are just enemies with funny names. But these are the ones I think are worth talking about. So the first one I'm going to talk about is an imp called Worthless Idiot, which I love the naming process for the imps at Obsidian. This one's called Worthless Idiot. It's actually a recruitable crew member in the Second Pillars of Eternity game, so you can have this imp on your crew as you sail through the oceans. This imp was thrown out of Arkhamir's mansion for spraying excrement over his owner's tablet. He has since then come to start watching seagulls with his mouth watering. You can approach this imp, realize that it might have potential as a crewmate, and he asks how much you're going to beat him, which you can respond with none. And he agrees regardless to be like, okay, cool, I'm on your crew now. So you can have an imp in your crew. Turns out to actually have a high intelligence, like an intelligence of 18, which is only two away from where his master was. So it's weird that they have such a high intelligence, yet they come across as idiotic. It's kind of an odd thing. The next imp I'm going to talk about is Drowsy Puke, who is another imp related to Arkhamir, the archmage that we get to interact with in the Second Pillars of Eternity game. The background for this imp is described as an imp furiously mixing powders and herbs into a mortar and pestle. It leers at you, showing off a row of pointed teeth and long, flicking tongue, which is, I guess, more lore about the physiology. Drowsy Puke is actually an imp working for Arkhamir, and he basically makes Arkhamir drugs. He provides Arkhamir with a dosage of drugs that can knock out an Orgur, but Arkhamir is fine with it. And this is actually part of Drowsy Puke's long-winded plan to overthrow Arkhamir and free all the oppressed imps. Whether or not that's going to work, I don't know. The next one I'm going to talk about is a imp known as Fetid Spray, and that's the name of the imp, Fetid Spray. You can tell that all of these imps are being named by wizards that do not like them, because they name them a bunch of horrible stuff. There's even one imp, I think, that's called Yellow Eye 3, which is just it's just an imp with yellow eyes, and it's the third of a bunch of imps, right? So it's just a descriptor followed by a number, right? So these things are not very well named. Fetid Spray, nothing that we really know about Fetid Spray except it interacts with you, the character. The imp turns to you and lets a quick puff of vile spray from an orifice that abruptly snaps shut. So at some point in the game, it looks like an imp said something to you through scent, and you have no idea what they said. I wonder what Fetid Spray was saying to you. With a name like that, I don't know. Might not be good. But yeah, so that's Fetid Spray. The last one I'm going to talk about has a little bit of spoileriness to it. So if you want to avoid any spoilers for a side quest within Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire, especially one that has to do with collecting a bunch of maps from Lord Admiral Imp, if that sounds familiar, I think it's a quest called The Lost Grimoires, then feel free to skip through this. It's not a huge spoiler, like it's not a massive spoiler, but I'm wanting to be sensitive to it. So if you want to skip it, go ahead. Otherwise, just jump ahead. I would say maybe a couple minutes or something, or until you hear the transition to the avowed question part, because that'll come right after this, because this is the only spoiler stuff in this episode. But yeah, so here we go. 3, 2, 1. I'm talking about an imp called Nemnok the Devourer. So Nemnok is this imp that you can encounter kind of at the end of this quest line where you're getting all these treasure maps put together, and you discover this town of boreal dwarves that are worshiping this god, Nemnok. And you're like, well, who's this Nemnok guy? And you end up going into Drowned Barrows, and you find all these Naga and Eotin and all these other creatures that are in this place seemingly worshiping this Nemnok person, who you discover is actually just a jumped-up imp. And so if you read the Nemnok the Devourer background on the fandom website, that is what it says. Nemnok is a jumped-up imp who created a cult around himself at Drowned Barrows, attracting Naga, Eotin, and the nearby Boreal Dwarf tribe to worship him. Nemnok is quite the potent charismatic force, if only he wasn't just an imp. He happened to find an amulet that made him smart enough to read grimoires and develop literacy. He fled Archimere's mansion, settled down in Drowned Barrows, and established a potent cult around himself. And he seems bigger. Like, if you interact with him in the game, he seems bigger. And that's probably because he's been interacting with magical artifacts, right? These people are worshiping him, so they're probably bringing their enchanted whatchamacallits, and he's been absorbing the magic within and beginning bigger, which just kind of furthers the narrative he's spinning that he is a god amongst creatures or mortal beings or what have you. So these people believe that this imp, Nemnok the Devourer, is actually a god, which is just a funny little side quest. If you defeat Nemnok, you can actually convince him to be your pet. So he goes from being the god of this little cult to your pet that flies around and helps you out a little bit. It's kind of funny. I love it. I'll end it there, so in case anyone's trying to skip through, they don't accidentally hear a spoiler. But with that said, let's ask the question, what do imps have to do with Avowed? Will we see imps in Avowed? Will we interact with them? Who knows?
Is an oath worth the weight of a crown?
So for my money, I don't think that imps are going to really play a huge role in Avowed. Now, I say that with really no backing evidence. I could 100% be wrong. Like, honestly, I'm going to put it 50-50 here. I'm just saying that if a gun to my head, what would I pick? I'd say imps might show up, but I don't see them being a big thing. And the reasons I think this is that, one, we only see them in Pillars of Eternity 2, and that can very well be explained by the fact that maybe Obsidian just developed them for the second Pillars of Eternity game. They hadn't really thought of them as creatures for the first one. It's almost like a retcon that exists for the first Pillars game that maybe imps are around there. Or are there imps in the first Pillars game? I don't remember seeing any. If any of you guys remember seeing one, send me a message. worldofaora@gmail.com. But they weren't very prevalent. So if they were in the first game, then that means that you don't really see them a lot outside of the Deadfire Archipelago. Maybe it has something to do with the Luminous Audra that's in that area. I don't know. But aside from that, because I don't actually think that's a major piece of evidence, I feel like imps, as funny as they are not going to be a mainline thing in Avowed. I think that if imps are present in Avowed, it'll be part of an isolated event. Like, you can only find them at, you know, the Archmage's house. Or there will be a side quest that involves an imp or two or something like that. And the reason I think that that Avowed's not going to have it is just because I don't get the feeling like they're trying to make this massive, massive, massive game with Avowed that has every tiny piece of lore from all the other Pillars of Eternity games shoved into this one game, which is supposed to be smaller in scope. Now, that could just mean the size of the map. It doesn't have to mean the length of the narrative or the amount of side quests, right? They could actually have a lot of hours of gameplay, but it was said to be kind of a shorter scope, kind of like The Outer Worlds was, which in my mind means that there's going to be parts of the lore that they're just not going to put into Avowed because it's not going to contribute to the overall narrative or the feel of the Living Lands as a setting or environment. Because you have to ask yourself, when you're making these creative endeavors like this, like, what contributes to the overall experience, and is this the kind of thing that we're wanting to deliver? So when it comes to imps, I'm sure they would be asking, like, do we want imps in Avowed? Is it going to line up with what we're trying to accomplish with Avowed? Is it going to enhance the experience in any way that it needs to be in the game? And for my money, I would be like, no. I mean, as funny as it can be and as awesome as it can be, it's definitely not a necessity. And I think there's already so much lore around the world of Aeora and that can be introduced in Avowed that they don't need to take all these sidesteps. I'm 100% open to being wrong here. I genuinely am 50-50 on it. I just picked one side to pick it. So I could 100% be wrong. Would you guys want to see imps in Avowed? Let me know. worldofaora@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter @worldofaora. Be interested to hear what you guys have to say. Me personally, I would love to see them because I think they're funny. I see whatever. It's the off-brand fart humor, if you will, but hey, funny is funny, and that's the end of it. So that's everything to discuss regarding imps within the world of Aeora. I mean, even though we don't know if we'll see them avowed, and personally I don't think we're going to see them avowed, I still think, you know, it's lore of the world, so I want to talk about it. This is a Pillars of Eternity and avowed lore. Thanks for joining me on today's episode about the lore. Nothing new about the show going on, just happy to jump into the new year and continue making content. I'm excited to find out when Avowed is going to be. As for myself, I just finally finished playing Alan Wake 2, and boy howdy was that an experience. That was a fun game. Fun is a word. It was a little mind-bendy. I didn't find it, like, hard to follow. Like, I feel like I was able to follow the internal logic of the game pretty well, but it was a great story. It was really well produced, wonderful game. I think people should take notes on narratives and games with Alan Wake 2. So I won't talk about it a lot because I talked about it before, but I finally finished that game. Other than that, I've been playing Super Mario 64. It's taken me 26 years, but I finally got all 120 stars in that game. And the only reason I'm playing it is because my son, he's not even 2 yet, he just loves Mario. He's always asking, Mario this, Mario that. And when he discovered he could be on the TV screen, he was even more excited. So I play Mario 64, I say with my son, but just kind of sitting next to my son. I play Mario 64 a lot now, and I probably will be for a very long time. Anyways, that's everything for today. Thanks everyone for joining me on today's episode of The World of Aeora as we looked into the wonderful and smelly world of imps and what they are like and how they communicate through smells, how they absorb magic, and they're just kind of a nuisance to wizards, but they're also hilarious. Thanks for joining me on the episode. I hope you liked it. If you have anything you want to ask, comment, or talk about, send me an email, worldofaeora@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter @worldofaeora. Thanks everyone for listening. I've been your host, Eric, aka Gingerino, and I'll see you guys next time.